This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 30th of December, 1956. The title of this lecture is Insanity, Scarcity, and Importances. This lecture is 64 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you don't look all dead yet. You're not entirely gone. Not completely. Are you at Congress?
Yeah.
Good. Is anybody taking any dianazine?
Yeah.
No.
Some of you are, huh? Wow. Well, the truth of the matter is that it doesn't do much. One of the more interesting aspects of it is that you might call it a radiation-type vaccination, you know? And you get tired of experiencing all those things, so when radiation hits you, you don't experience them. I mean, that's really what works. It's quite amazing, the variation of reaction. Well, that leads at once to the whole idea of insanity, and I thought I'd talk a little bit more about insanity. Would you like to hear a little more about insanity? Well, insanity is a problem which man has had with him for many, many, many ages, eons, track years, tremendous number of years. And he's used various methods of solving it. Various methods of solving it. Now, these methods have included the knout, solitary confinement, ducking. In fact, they've included almost any kind of brutality known. The whole subject has evidently been a popular subject for a very long time. One of the methods of solving it is to take the insane and make them the psychiatrist. you thought I was joking, but that is actually a mechanism known as the shaman's call. The Goldie people up along the Amur River use nothing else in the selection of the tribal witch doctor. They wait for somebody to go mad and wander around and start acting in a peculiar fashion. They pat him on the head, and he's the next witch doctor. And he becomes the authority for all tribal actions. Now, on the whole track, and in Scientology, a whole track is a parascientological phrase, meaning all the time a thetan has been on the track since the moment he was in the universe, which includes the idea of time, which track is, of course, bestudded by mental image pictures of those events which a thetan most cherished or was least able to get rid of. Or which were least admired. And the whole track phenomena has included the broad practice of psychiatry for many, many billions of years. Now, you should know in the book called originally What to Audit and then called A History of Man, and which probably come out under with a complete rewrite, Dangerous Universe, much expanded. That book, I think now available under History of Man, gives the principal whole track incidents which have been least admired and therefore most held on to. And these include a very great number of radioactive phenomena. Practically every whole track incident was done with radioactive materials. I'll give you the idea of how that is. Once upon a time, once upon a time, a spirit being, Thetan, did not make his walls and solids out of this stuff. This stuff is simply reflective. A light lights there, and something reflects there, don't you see? That curtain is visible only so long as a light shines on it. The curtain itself does not furnish its own visibility. Now, way, way back in the early stages of this universe, evidently something wasn't considered any good unless it itself provided its own visibility. In other words, that curtain was a good curtain if it radiated. If it glowed enough to be seen itself without any reflected light, then it was a Thetan's idea of a good thing. In other words, every cubic inch of this particular room on a whole track way back when idea would have been for every cubic inch of this room to have glowed with brightness and with brilliance and intense radiation. You could have warmed your hands at any fire plug with good, pleasant, sunny gamma. But Thetans didn't admire material which didn't glow, so that's what they got now. You have to shine lights on it to get it to gleam. You see how there could be a difference here. Now, the half-life of elements is an interesting theory, but is not particularly useful for our purposes. It's only a theory that things take a half-life to get half-life. It's just a theory. It is not a fact. Just like many other things that are such tremendous truths, there isn't much more there than a supposition. By half-life, it means how long does it take a piece of radioactive substance to be half as active or half as massive? Half-life. See? How long does it take it to reduce in size? Well, obviously, then, if you took anything like a piece of radium, which weighed a milligram, obviously, at some time in the past, it weighed 2 milligrams. And we guess at how long ago that was and say the half-life of radium is. But I'll call something to your attention. In view of the fact that very few physical scientists have any thetans, very few of them have stood around watching the deterioration of a piece of radioactivity so as to determine accurately its half-life. Just let me call that to your attention. Now, it's as difficult to prove a half-life theory as it is to prove total survival. How would you prove total survival? You'd have to live the universe all the way through, clear to the end. You could prove the length of time that the universe would be in existence by observing the total length of time of the universe in existence. Everything else would be figure. Now, it is true that radioactive substances diminish in mass. That's because they don't like to stay together. Radioactive substances diminish in mass because they do not like to stay together. There's more to that statement than you would notice. Because the duplicative reaction to radiation is not to stay together. Disperse. In other words, radiation disperses, or radioactive substance disperses. So somebody observing radiation tends to disperse. I'm afraid there's no more to it than that. Particles of radioactive material individuate. They become individuals. So we see people under the bombardment of radiation individuate and tend to fall away from one another and become individuals. They get so convinced of this after a while, they're afraid that they gather in a large group, they'll blow up. And while you're taking dianazine, and while somebody else around you is taking dianazine, you will occasionally hear such a person, now and then, such a person complains about the fact that while you're taking dianazine, you're radiating. They can feel you radiating. Well, of course, I admit that you're giving off some heat and you're glowing a bit. But I don't think there's any truth in the fact that there's a person has an output of gamma merely because they take a little dianazine. And yet you have people swearing that this is the case and trying to stay away from people who are on dianazine. Now, you get that as just a cue and cue. I mean, you've got a... You have the situation, and the answer to the situation is the situation. So in a radioactive age, or time, or period, we get individuation as being the thing to do. We get the decentralization of governments, industry. Now, we can explain all these things very easily. We say, well, of course they decentralize, because if they were close together, they could be bombed. However, that's a secondary rationale. Secondary rationale. They're just radiation disperses, so things disperse. You got the idea? Now, therefore, a thetan sooner or later must have conceived some harm to be contained in radiation, to react to it and consider that that reaction is harmful. And we get one of the basic postulates, one of the basic convictions. It isn't as basic as conviction itself, but it's quite basic. That something can be harmful. This is quite an idea. This is a terrific idea. It's worked to death. That something can be harmful. And it is good enough in an hysterical age simply to point to something and say that is harmful for belief to be widespread. I'll give you that thing I've told you about several times, the messianic level of the tone scale in the old Dianetic Scientology tone scale. As a race or culture goes down tone scale, they get to a messianic idea. Anybody jumps up that says such and so is harmful, everybody follows him. Get the idea? Hey, he's got a mob in his hands at once. You got the idea? I mean, if somebody would stop on a street corner and... Say, isn't it a horrible thing to fix up these lamp posts so they're solid poison? Why, you would have a large mob of people very anxious to chop down lamp posts. In other words, they've lost track of actual causation and they are substituting causes, which we'll talk about tomorrow. Substitution of causes. So the Indian... losing left and right, mostly because he had so many members of his culture were not capable of producing, he himself could not maintain a fighting force in the field. And he lost to the white man left and right. But instead of saying the cause of the degeneration of our culture is the white man, instead of saying the reason we have no buffalo is because the white man killed off the buffalo, he no longer could look at the white man. And he said, the reason why we are degenerating and disintegrating and going to pieces is dogs. And therefore, if we kill all the dogs, the buffalo will come back and we will be all right. So we killed all the dogs. Another fellow jumped up and he says, the trouble with you is that you're vulnerable to bullets. And I'm going to sell you some shirts here that are invulnerable to bullets. And we had the last great Indian uprising, which took place up in the Dakota Territories, the ghost shirts. And these fellows would attack a fort wearing these ghost shirts, which had been double blessed by some psychotic medicine man. And the bullets would go straight through them, wham, 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 and they'd keep on charging. And it took them years and years to find out that a ghost shirt did not stop a bullet. In other words, they could not accept evidence. And that is the main criteria. They cannot accept evidence when they get down to this messianic level. Now, before a race reaches that level, it is capable of recovering. But after, it broadly is no longer able to accept evidence. When it substitutes all causes for real causes, there is nothing much thee or me can do about it, because nobody has had enough responsibility for it to keep it going. And so it falls apart. And it falls apart particularly under this Q&Q with radiation. Radiation disperses, so people disperse. Out of such a period, we can expect a messianic level to be obtained in rather short order. We're seeing some of those symptoms now. And one of the major symptoms is what is passing today for the treatment of something that is called insanity. Now, this is a messianic symptom. This is a symptom of a great many people no longer capable of observing evidence, who are indulging in practices they do not understand, and who are giving them very complicated names in order to get them across. And we have the governments of states and nations awarding such people such enormous sums of money to carry on this activity that we ourselves are incapable of assuming that this is evidence of anything except dementia. The messianic level must be close at hand, where a multi-billion dollar program is carried forward to cure insanity, which has not even been defined by this cult and which has never been cured by it. And so we have perhaps already put our toe into a messianic period when it gets this broadly. But insanity and the treatment of insanity have been with the whole tract almost its entire distance. The basic use of insanity, and nothing is ever around unless it has some use. It doesn't matter what minor use it has. Really, all things that are around do have some minor role to play somewhere. It's not necessarily true that the role is important or true or needed, but something plays a role somewhere in all ways. And insanity was such a thing. Insanity is this protest. It occurs in an area where death has ceased to be a solution. Death does not any longer free a person from punishment. And where death no longer results in exteriorization or freedom from punishment, we then get this secondary answer, insanity. And insanity says this to those around: you need not punish me any further. I am not any longer capable of any responsibility or rational action. I am no menace to you or anybody else, because I cannot control this thing and I do not control it. Now, death actually was quite an invention. A body would go along and bang, be gone, and anything that body or its identity had done became canceled. One robbed a few banks and then he got killed. When he picked up a new body, nobody came around, tapped him on the shoulder and said, "You go to trial for those bank robberies." But if people insisted on this happening, you would then get very widespread insanity, because insanity would be another answer. An individual would say, "I don't even know you. I am not capable of rational thought or action or anything else. I am not able any longer to respond, so therefore you needn't punish me anymore." There are several such mechanisms used, the mechanisms of irresponsibility. And all of these mechanisms are apparently adapted to various problems which life has met somewhere on the whole track. But here's a great oddity. Only in those times and periods when people have had the idea of tremendous body scarcity has insanity been a tremendous problem to any culture. The problem of insanity rises and is a problem to a culture only when the idea of scarcity of bodies, scarcity of individualities, is dominant in that culture. In other words, it is possible to breed insanity by spreading the idea that bodies are so valuable they mustn't be handled or managed in any fashion whatsoever. You could then breed insanity in that area. In other words, it's a scarcity of havingness, a scarcity of mass. And when you have a scarcity of bodies, then, of course, nobody wishes to desert a body. And instead of deserting the body, they use insanity as a substitute for death. And they say, you see, I still have the body, but I'm crazy. I can't do anything. You see? Otherwise, they would simply permit themselves to be knocked off and they'd pick up another body. But when bodies are so scarce, and you understand that that's synonymous with just this idea, bodies are scarce. You see, it doesn't have to be a fact. It just has to be this one idea. Bodies are scarce. People get that idea broadly. Then they hold on to a body long after they ordinarily would. And escape responsibility and punishment by demonstrating the manifestations of insanity. They say, you see, I'm exhausted. I can't work. I can't move. I can't control this thing. They say various things because they're trying to save that body. Now, how does this weave into radiation? Well, when radiation was first used, there was lots of it. And then there got to be less of it. People became very dependent upon everything glowing in order to be seen. And when they no longer saw it when it was glowing, they became allergic to it. In other words, they became so dependent on it they could no longer stand it. It became valuable. It became so valuable that it no longer could be permitted to exist. And that is the course of value. Things get so valuable you can't have them. You probably remember some keepsake of your parents that you yourself liked very much to look at or play with. But it was valuable, so what happened to it? It went up here on the shelf. It was out of reach. It was not something you could touch, not something you could have. It was too valuable, so it went out of use. And one fine day, because it might have gotten some dust on it or something of the sort, or might have gotten knocked off, it was put away in a trunk someplace. And then they decided that that trunk ought to be put in a safe place and went into an attic, and then you moved and forgot it. You don't have it anymore. Things get so valuable that they disappear. They get so valuable that they no longer exist. And all you have to do is make something terribly valuable to eventually wipe it out completely. Or, reversely, all you have to do is wipe something out to make it valuable. Take passenger pigeons. Boy, they were the least valuable item that America had. Those things used to fly over head, and probably people cursed them and so on. Interesting way they used to hunt these things. They used to have ladders. And they put double-barrel shotguns with slugs in them, you know, down at the bottoms of the ladders. And they'd wait till the whole ladder was loaded with pigeons, and then they'd pull the trigger and get the whole works. They were just too many of them. There was no value to them at all. Wagon loads of the things. They used to shoot up whole wagon loads of things. Then one day somebody found out there weren't so many of them. Immediately they became a valuable bird. And then when there were none anymore, well, that was something very, very sad. They were a terribly valuable bird by that time, but they didn't exist anymore. And then somebody came along and found one. Why, its price was in the millions. You see how these things go? It's that way with bodies. But the state of mind which follows this is quite important. First, there is the idea of scarcity. There doesn't have to be a scarcity at all. An idea of scarcity. And that is followed then by an idea of importance. And that is followed then by an idea of gone. Now, you could just interchange these ideas any way you want to. I tell you now, well, think of Joe. He's no longer with us. Right away, Joe's an important guy, see? They do this in conventions all the time. They say, in last year, we lost Brother Bevan. Everybody. Brother Bevan was an awful bore. Every time he came to a convention, everybody tried to get drunk. He used to get drunk. Hardly anybody knew his name, but he died. In other words, he ceases to exist. Instantly, he's important. Get the idea? Now, there might be some perfectly valuable member of the convention who's around every place, and everybody likes him, and he's doing fine, and everybody's happy to see him, and that sort of thing. Well, now just magnify this. Now, this guy disappears. Wow, that leaves a hole you could drop the Empire State Building through, you see? Because you can always supplement the idea of value with the fact of value. And when that occurs, you really have something. But the idea of value is not necessarily accompanied by the fact of value at all. The idea of scarcity could be accompanied by the fact of scarcity, and then you'd really have something. But the idea of scarcity doesn't need to be accompanying the fact of scarcity. But very often, people get the idea of scarcity and then they industriously go to work to make everything scarce because it's so valuable. Do you know man has gotten so valuable today that people are thinking seriously of wiping him out? He's valuable. He's too valuable. He must be defended with such ferocity that everybody will be killed. The idea of using an atom bomb to defend anything is like giving a guy a pistol loaded with one bullet and telling him to play Russian roulette in order to improve his nerves. Now, you have to understand this, the concordances, you might say, of abundance and scarcity, and how it relates to importance, unimportance, in other words, not valuable, valuable. Funny part of it is the balance of nature is always coming up and improving this business of value. That's one of the more interesting things. Up here in Maryland, just a few miles from this hall, they once conceived the idea that hawks were very, very much a drug on the market. There were lots of hawks. And these hawks were all too many. So the county put a bounty on the hawks. I don't know how much the bounty was, 5 cents, 25 cents, 50 cents, but it was a bounty. Anybody who shot a hawk and brought the hawk in would be paid his bounty. There were too many hawks. Now, they didn't even know that the hawks were stealing chickens. There was no evidence involved in this. They just knew there were too many hawks. And with wild abandon, the Maryland farmer slaughtered all the hawks and brought them in and got his bounty. And ever since that day, his crops have been chopped to pieces by mice, the stable diet of the hawks. So they had too many hawks, they wiped those out, and then they got too many mice. Well, they're liable to wipe out all the mice someday and find out that they had a restraining influence on something, and there will all of a sudden be too many of something else. Maybe the mice absorb all the vermin. Who knows? You can see the idea. Somebody gets an idea of too great an abundance, and they do something about that, and they all of a sudden create a scarcity somewhere. And that creates too great an abundance somewhere else of something else. And they do something about that, creating a scarcity there, and they get an abundance. But after a while, there's nothing less to have an abundance of. And that's an important item if you're creating scarcities. Always be sure you have enough of something to create a scarcity of it. Something Republicans always overlook. For instance, they've been creating scarcities of food one way or the other and having a good time and calling it farm aid. And now there are several Middle Western states busily blowing away. They've created a scarcity of food out of an abundance of food. And someday there's some people that aren't going to eat. Plowing pigs under. It was a great theory in England where it was never used, but exported to America as the real McCoy a couple of decades ago, it became the thing to do. Now, momentarily, we still have enough food. But somebody is upsetting restraints and balances there. Nothing is able to seek its own level, and all of a sudden, there's going to be trouble. In other words, insane conditions are created, evidently, every time scarcities and abundances are too greatly disturbed. You disturb scarcities, you disturb abundances too greatly, and you get insane conditions resulting in most cases. On the whole track, psychiatric practice is very interesting. Psychiatry was always leveled at the leaders of any unit or society during most of the periods of the track. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? You can go over this with an e-meter. You can pick up quite a considerable amount of evidence. But even today in this society, there's hardly a congressman that doesn't have his pet psychiatrist. That's right. You go around and look at him over, his daughter's being psychoanalyzed, or his wife is in or out of the local spin bin. There's something happening. People who are relatively important politically, people who are important industrially, would shock you. The number of trained psychiatrists these people are supporting. There's where the abundance of psychiatrists disappears to. But this is a natural thing for a stimulus response profession such as psychiatry to do. It is the natural thing for it to do. Shouldn't be criticized for it, it just does. It gyrates at once toward importances. Important people are its target, because importance is a keynote of insanity, and they don't know it. They don't know that importance has much to do with it. They characterize several brands of insanity as megalomania, several other anias and manias and so on, where people are too important or they're not important enough or something of the sort. And they characterize these, but they also characterize thousands of others that have nothing to do with this. But they automatically gyrate. They are attracted to these importance factors. You got that? That's a fascinating aspect. Man is in charge of a station of some sort or another, a military station of some sort. The first person the psychiatrist would look at or do anything to on being assigned to that station would be the head of that station. They've done it on the whole track, and they do it today. How you cure up any political situation. Treat for insanity the leader of any group. The psychiatric idea today of Scientology is quite interesting, quite fascinating. If they express any opinion on it, they're liable to say, well, we start out with the fact that Hubbard is insane. Naturally. And everybody else in the group has his own psychiatrist. I've heard that recently. I was willing to agree with that when I was going to describe what kind of a cage we kept him in. But you hear this going around merely because somebody in a group has perhaps a little greater importance than somebody else, or perhaps his name is better known or something of that sort. Psychiatry's immediate adjudication is that that person is mad. See? That's its immediate response. You see, it doesn't necessarily follow that all importances are psychotic. But it does follow that psychotic psychiatrists stimulus respond on importances only. You got that? It's a stimulus response. Now, there can be a sane reaction to any scarcity, abundance, importance, or unimportance. You see, there can be a sane reaction. People can like people because they're important. People can talk to people because they're important. People can talk to other people because they're unimportant. But their adjudication of it is based on connected evidence. They're observing the evidence of the situation. Don't you see? Now, let's take another angle on this. All of a sudden, we have All the kids in the school suddenly talking to Jimmy. Jimmy is terribly important to all the kids in the school. What's Jimmy done? They don't know. He's important. What's he done? Well, I don't know. Get the idea? There isn't anything else there than their idea that something is important, don't you see? This person, this Jimmy, is important, so therefore they like to talk to this Jimmy. Got that? There's no connective evidence, so we say they're nuts. See, it's simple as that. The whole subject of importance and unimportance is the subject of reason. Data is as important as it can be related to other data. The logics of Dianetics. Importance and unimportance. Ability to select importances and unimportances. Is the ability of sanity. But when these importances and unimportances come about reactively, totally because of scarcities and abundances, we are moving over toward insanity. You got the idea? Do you see how this is connected? Because a person thinks something is unimportant and thinks something is important, is no test at all of that person's sanity or insanity. The evidence and connectedness of the material surrounding these items would have a great deal to do with the sanity of it. You see this? If you cannot select importances, and if you don't know who or what is important in any given group of data or people, you're crazy. But when you have ideas of importance and unimportance which are no longer connected with any agreement in the society, you're probably nuts. All right? We all come into a room. There's a black panther in the middle of the room. We say, yow, and we back out. We say it's important to have a scarcity of us in that room. We're behaving rationally because we're behaving on the laws of consequences. Now, we all come in a room. One of us says, yow, there's a black panther in this room. We say, where? Right there, he says. We say, now, wait a minute, there's no black panther there. What's the matter with you? He's merely out of agreement, isn't he? Well, the funny part of it is, if he was that far out of agreement, he would probably say, well, there is a black panther there, and I'm going over and eat him. In other words, he will start violating other agreements if he violates one. And we see then that there's no connective consequence or evidence to his reason with regard to this mythical black panther in the middle of the room. You see that? That person's assignation of importance then is aberrated. And is what you would call aberration, merely because it's out of agreement with what we assign importance to. Do you get the idea? All right. Can we artificially bring about a condition akin to insanity in any person? Yes. Yes. Not by giving him electric shocks, prefrontal lobotomy, psychiatrists, or anything else. But by a very simple mechanism. We convince him of the scarcity and terrible value of his body. With no connective evidence. Got that? We take a motor mech and we explain to him with the greatest of care, with no connective evidence, how important it is that he rest. Not for any reason. Now, you've seen a group of men pull this gag on one of their number. And one of their number finally wakes up and laughs about it, too, because he realizes he's being led down a track to the deep pit. They play it in this crude fashion. They say, They, amongst themselves, they agree that they'll pick on Joe and they'll convince Joe that he doesn't look well today. Well, they walk in and Joe passes by and they say, "What's the matter, Joe?" Everybody asks him this question, and before much more time goes by, Joe starts to feel a little goofy. He feels bad. He finally realizes it's a gag, and he snaps out of it at once. Well, now, that's one thing they do. That is related action to this other action. They say, "You know..." This guy, Joe, by the way, is the one who puts cardboard boxes in the incinerator. Everybody starts saying, "Boy, I don't know what this organization would do without Joe." They keep telling Joe this. And Joe one day says, "Well, I realize something now. I realize something. That I am the most important person in this organization." You know, that's contrary to fact. They could get dozens of other guys that would shove these cardboard boxes into the incinerator. Not supported by evidence. But he could be worked upon in this fashion, cold-bloodedly, to a point where he would go mad. His first symptom would be to lay off using the body. Fail to control it. Not work. And just back clean out of the whole thing. Because he was so important, because obviously nobody else was going to admit this terrible importance, but everybody admitted it, but the people in the high places didn't realize it. And you could just keep working on this guy. The tremendous importance of his job. Picking out these boxes. Now, we admit that he is relatively important, and his actual importance is observable, but he is not the most important person present. Now, he becomes convinced that he is. When he is not, you have a kickoff into insanity. He'll eventually just abandon use. It is true that he has a level of importance with relation to other levels of importance. But when that thing gets thrown too far out of gear, you have a resultant knockdown of the person's skill and ability. Got that? In other words, It doesn't require this, don't get this idea, that it requires that a person conceive himself to be unimportant. You see, now that's picking up the abundance ratio. A person conceives himself to be terribly unimportant. That's the road to insanity too, because you've upset the abundance and scarcity ratio. He is just as important as he is, and that's how important he is. See? He's not less important or more important than he is important. You got the idea? Now, whenever you adjust this feeling of importance in the field of thought, maladjust it, you then get the consequences and logical processes of life around him out of adjustment too. And he begins to represent an insane picture. For instance, if the President of the United States all of a sudden fired the entirety of the Secret Service, insisted that he had nothing further to do with secretaries, lived in the White House with his wife and cooked himself flapjacks on the stove, you'd say he's nuts. Because he's not assigning himself the proper ratio of importance that he should have in that structure. Now there he's assigning himself unimportance, isn't he? All right, now supposing we got a President of the United States who would associate with nobody but the greatest men in the country. He wouldn't talk to anybody else but the greatest men in the country. He wouldn't talk to his secretaries or anything like that. He'd only talk to the greatest men. He would only talk to the authorities on subjects, not let anybody ever say anything that wasn't an authority on a subject because it would be using up his time. Who would never meet the public or permit the public to come anywhere near his domain. Now, we exaggerate this to the idea that he insisted on riding down the avenue every week, Tuesdays at 4 o'clock, and that the public kneel as he went by. He's nuts. He'd be crazy because he's giving himself more importance than he has. The President of the United States is expected to have a certain degree of importance. And when he has more or less, he is then out of order with relationship to the agreed upon importances in his vicinity, and so we would say he's crazy. He's expected to have a certain old shoe attitude regard to his job, see? He's expected to have. He's expected to regard himself just so important here and just so unimportant there. You got the idea? And when he fits those agreed upon categories of the rest of the public, they accept him. Now, the truth of the matter is his ideas could be for the birds. But people say about him. Okay, he's president. You see how this could be adjusted then? Now, there is insane conduct. A person either is much less important or much more important. Now, we take a housewife who will not treat with any of the children, won't talk to them, won't do anything for them, won't get anything for them, won't get her husband's breakfast, won't have anything to do with that, isn't even lazy, but is simply unwilling to perform any action relating to her job. Now, we just don't have a person that we would say was crazy. We'll have a person who acts in many other disagreements and who is not capable of being important enough to herself. Now, she could do this for two reasons. One, because she isn't worthy of being a housewife. See, you'll get that one. And the other one is because she's too important to be a housewife. See? Somebody came along a few years ago and had set every woman in this country up for insanity by saying there's something demeaning about keeping a family running. Let me tell you something. It requires a genius, bar none. It is an act of superb genius to keep the smallest family wheeling. It isn't something that one sort of does, you know, if he does it well. And somebody came along and said this is an unimportant role for a woman to occupy. That was a nice piece of trickery, wasn't it? The end result was that womanhood blew up. This happened many, many decades ago, long before any of you girls' time. That's right, woman's suffrage. What would you think of a pack of women who were going around knocking bars to pieces with hatchets? For instance, out of agreement with your world, you know where you find women. You find them in bars. Well, the funny part of it was that man started downgrading women by making her a chattel. Somewhere after Roman times, women were made into chattels. In other words, somebody said they are less important than they were. Somebody degraded them with an unimportance, see? And they struggled along in that sphere for a long time and finally revolted into a greater importance than they had. Both actions appear psychotic. Both actions are not real because they are not in agreement with the rest of the society. And so we get this adjustment, however, in any life form, only it's usually minor. The working man, the working man, is as important as he is. He is not less important or more important than he is. When you need a plumber, brother, you need a plumber. And when he's fixing the plumbing, he's an awfully important guy. But that doesn't mean that we should erect shrines to plumbers. You get the idea? Now, some great socialist movements have tried to drive everybody mad by saying this working man is much more important than he is. Actually, they made him much more important than he thought he was. And they finally said, you know, what am I doing in these overalls? I should wear at least a top hat. And then they found out they weren't that important, and they started to cave in the other direction. They said, then I'm not important at all. And a society would lose a whole straight. I'm talking now about the Middle Ages, when the unions were really going. All of a sudden, some unit of a city would suddenly say, well, then we aren't really important at all. We're just street sweepers. And by golly, first thing you know, there wouldn't be any. There'd be no street sweeping. In other words, the various cogs of society tend to align themselves according to a sequence of reason, use, and rationale. They have a certain abundances and scarcity, certain importances and unimportances. And when these things are violated, we get a chaotic, not an orderly, condition. And this chaotic condition we could characterize as insanity, as long as we have to call something insanity. But insanity itself is actually an absence of responsibility. It's an absence of things. It's a complete missingness of a lot of things. And therefore, it isn't anything. You follow me? I mean, you can see this rather clearly. There's no sense in building an idol up here and saying, this is Thragmagog. See? Well, we can give this thing an identity and say it's Thragmagog, but it has no importance. Not to that degree. It is what it is, which is something we have given an identity to. Don't you see this? So insanity is what it is. It is something we have given an identity to. And in actuality, it's an absence of anything. When you get a total scarcity with no hope of any future acquisition, when one has no further role connected with anything, he is then approaching something that we would call insanity. In other words, an individual who is on his way out says, I have no further importance to the society. My life is done. My life is spent. He then begins to act like a psychotic person. His bank starts caving in on him. He sees confusions. He gets visions. All sorts of weird things happen to him. And you say, for heaven's sakes, look at all that aberration. Look at that thing called insanity. No, you're not looking at a thing. You're looking at the absence of livingness, the absence of a part in, the absence of any further hope of being a part of. And that results in these mental quirks and imbalances which you see in people. Now, an individual, of course, plays around with these things because it means a game. It's an interesting thing. Life is what it is. People are what they are. And by the way, one of the greatest religious orders, the Jesuits, always had the idea, if I believe it was the Jesuits, that man was made by God the way he was. Man was made the way he was, and God used him as he was. In other words, they had a total as-ising attitude toward man and life. A very sane society in a number of ways. But they certainly had a tendency to keep putting themselves out of the game one way or the other. The history of the Jesuits is quite interesting. It's a roller coaster. You look at this much as-isness without trying to change anything, and you'll have to find yourself with no game someday. You think it'd be a good thing to stand on the edge of, be a part of an airplane squadron and look over and say, well, that's the squadron and that's the way it is, and that's it. Where's the game in that, huh? No, you do it this way. You say, well, there's the squadron, and my God, is it being terribly run at this time. We'll have to patch it up somehow. You can't find anything wrong with it, make something wrong with it. That's the way you play life, you see. It isn't an optimum circumstance where every Scientologist sits back and says, well, that's the way man is. God help us. We're unfortunately limited. We have to work too hard to make him worse. But we're abundantly supplied with worsenesses at this time, so that the game, of course, automatically directs itself toward betterness. And we can do a great many things in this direction. But what is this thing called insanity? It is a thing called insanity. And there isn't anything else there, and that's what makes it insane. You get the idea? Now, if you're studying insanity by trying to put things there so that you can understand what they are, you'll wind up in the spin bin sooner or later. That's for sure, and that's why psychiatry on the whole track is wound up. Psychiatry is one of the oldest professions known to man next to prostitution. Excuse me. These boys have operated, however, most dominantly in those areas which were least supplied with havingness. They operate easily in military forces because nobody in a military force is permitted to own. They will operate even more flagrantly and more hugely in military forces of the future as loot goes more and more out of fashion. If you won't even let a private soldier rob, which is the usual thing to do, he can't own anything. And as the private soldier owns less, he'll get more and more psychiatry. As he is less and less important, or exaggeratedly important, he will get more psychiatry. As a matter of fact, the private soldier today is probably has an exaggeration of importance rather than otherwise. He is just a private soldier. He does what he does traditionally through the ages. Private soldiers have done certain things. They are necessary. They are important. They are also unimportant in numerous categories, don't you see? They have a certain level of importance. And when you all of a sudden say, well, all private soldiers must be treated like captains, boy, you're really going to have a bunch of psychiatrists. You're going to need them. I don't know for what, but you see how you could do this? You could tell private soldiers, now, a private soldier was once more important than he is. He wasn't important as an individual who had to be pampered. He was important because he was a member of a spirited, meaningful body of men. That was a spree. It was a third dynamic importance. He's swapping that today for a first dynamic importance. And I think they're getting up to the optimum now. It was one psychiatrist per company a few months ago, when I looked it over, I think it was one psychiatrist per company is what they were aiming for. And I think this is being modified now to one psychiatrist per platoon, and by 58 it'll be one per squad, and I hope it never gets to one per soldier. No, I hope it does get to one per soldier. There aren't that many psychiatrists. You get the idea. As we adjust and throw out of gear and out of reason and out of meaning the purposes of individuals, we get trouble. For instance, the private soldier today is kidding himself if he says he's very important in war. Because the weapon picture today and the pattern of the next great war will not be the pattern of the individual. He probably won't live long enough in the war to take any part in it any more than a civilian would. Probably this has some reaction on the private soldier. In other words, there are factors at work at all times which readjust and throw out of line these importances and unimportances, and where they are wildly thrown out of line, they are succeeded by insane conditions, which we then say are irrational, and we don't want to understand, we don't want to have anything to do with them. As a matter of fact, they aren't understandable because there's nothing there to be understood. Do you understand that? If you can understand a situation where there is nothing to be understood, you've got it. Don't ever stand around and watch a psycho spin, you know, and say, I wonder what he's doing and what is the basis of all that? Or why do you suppose he's doing that? I wonder what Greek word fits that insanity. No, he hasn't got a body. He has no havingness. There is no beingness. It isn't anything there to be there. And that is what is wrong with him. He is a body. He is a person in a body. He ought to be using the body according to certain rationales of the society in which he lives. And he isn't using that body. And he doesn't dare. It's too valuable. It's not valuable enough. He's too important because it's all so unimportant. And he's just all mixed up on scarcities and abundances. But he does have a body, but he isn't there. And he's nuts. And that's just about it. What do you do to cure him? Well, you'd never put him in solitary. Boy, that's no way to cure a criminal or a psycho. Let him find out how many there are of him. That'd be one way to go about it on a mass basis. Never let psychos live alone. Put them in mobs. Get DeMille to direct that one, mob scenes. Now, there would be one crude approach. One of the worst things you could do to them is actually segregate them from the society. Maybe it isn't a good thing to have psychos scattered around in the society. Maybe it isn't a good thing, but it might very well be a worse thing if they're segregated. See, it could be that the cure is worse than the curse. Could be. Because you and I, for instance, as individual citizens, would have ways and means of taking care of a psycho. We would figure out ways and means of taking care of a psycho if we had them on our hands all the time. If we were liable to run into any guy who was driving on both sides of the street and so forth, I'm sure any number of guys here, we follow more or less the same pattern. We'd probably make him pull over the curb and take his keys away from him and leave him sitting there. We would do things, in other words, to take care of the problem. We wouldn't hide the problem where nobody could see it. Now, the remedy of havingness of bodies is the cure for psychosis. And that is a very, very good thing to know. If you can get a psycho to waste his surroundings and waste bodies, he would become well. Just do it well enough till you can remedy his havingness on the subject of bodies and you've got it made. I'm afraid that's all there is to it. I wish it were a complicated subject, but there's almost as little in it as there is nothing in insanity. But of course, it's a simplicity that is so simple that it's taken me a very long time to see it. I hope it doesn't take you as long. I hope that helps you out. Now, the whole subject of psychiatry is, of course, something which on the whole track has always been a subject of ribaldry. Space opera had the most psychiatrists. Why? Because they had the least mass, the least bodies. Awful lot of space, very little mass. And they did all sorts of psychiatric tricks, which were awfully interesting. And only pale versions of these things are used today. Don't even bother to protest against them. The psychiatrist who exists today in his prefrontal lobotomies, his electric shocks, and so forth, is a punk. They're not effective. They're not even effectively ineffective. And that takes some doing. We, however, should straighten out something about psychiatry and insanity, because it is not meet that a group of people who are not in possession of the information should be in possession of the bodies. That in itself makes an insane condition. They who can do nothing for them have them. And they're going to make more insane than they will cure in the years to come unless we take some active role in attacking this problem in this society at this time, for which we now have the answer. Thank you.